Slapper Chicken brings you a special announcement from the Worm Tourism and Publicity Department. Today, we'll be telling you all about the wonders of Worm. We hope that after this episode, you consider Worm as a viable option. Thank you. If you're not already here from the Instagram and the Facebook, we have an Instagram and a Facebook, which you can follow. They're both Slap the Chicken, as you might expect. You might have noticed I've been missing in action for a little while. This is because I have been working, I have been doing many interesting things and enjoying myself and coming up with some new music that I'm into lately. Now with Worms, we may as well start off at the beginning, and we may as well start off with, what on earth are Worms? Well, they come from an informal classification that used to refer to invertebrate animals which are tube-shaped, really. The word worm comes from Carl Linnaeus's now obsolete classification for any invertebrate animal without an exoskeleton. That word was vermes. A misspelling of this has since been used by a horrid little delivery company that has much less dignity than any worm. They live in the soil, the water, and sometimes in animals. Worms, not Hermes delivery drivers. Disclaimer, parasitic worms shall not be discussed in this episode. They shall not be discussed since they bring me disgust. And I know that some of you are eating your tea and don't want to hear about the government right now. I hope that all of you will be familiar with earthworms, which are the worms you see in your garden in the earth. Let's find out more about... and wonder what on earth it does all day. Well, if you stop wiggling for a second, you might notice that the worm is burrowing through the soil, mixing it up, and meaning that water can be absorbed more readily. More water being absorbed into the ground means that flooding is less likely. Flood prevention is hungry work, so earthworms eat a variety of foods such as decaying matter, soil, and fungi. They eat by coating a small bit of food with saliva and sucking it into their esophagus. They're actually separated into different ecotypes according to the job they occupy in the soil and the size of the worm. You may notice when it rains, the worms come out. They're various different sizes. Some worms are big, some worms are small. Now, the first one is epigeic worms. These are tiny little worms. They are the smallest of earthworms. They do not burrow. They live in the leaf litter, and indeed they eat the leaf litter. They have pigmented skin, unlike some other worms which we shall explore in a minute. Endogeic worms are the next type of worm. They are little to medium-sized worms. It was necessary to specify that epigeic worms are pigmented because these worms, the endogeic ones, are not pigmented. That's right, we have a non-pigmented worm in the house. Endogeic worms have a network of horizontal branching burrows. These can stretch up to 50 centimetres below the surface. Now, a worm whose burrows do not branch is the anisic type of earthworm. Now, this one is a big boy. He's the biggest of the boys when it comes to the earthworms. They make unbranching burrows straight down. It can be like 2 meters vertically, which is a lot when you're a little earthworm. Well, relatively big earthworm anyway. There's little spaces on the side of the burrow which you can put a worm cocoon in for baby worms. These worms are pigmented and they eat fresh leaf litter. Now, at the top of the burrow, there is a hole leading from the human world into the worm world. And there is a big pile of casts around the top of this hole, and it's known as a midden, which is a posh term for a big pile of poo. Now, there is another type of earthworm called epiendogeic. They are found just below the leaf litter and they're sort of moderately sized. They aren't little boys, but they aren't as big as the anisic ones. Now, earthworms are in the annelid family, which is one of many distinguished families that a worm may belong to. Other worm families include platyhelminths, which are flat, and another type called the nemertians, which we shall explore now. So, nemertians are commonly known as ribbon worms. Their name comes from a mythical Greek sea nymph called Nemertes. Now, how do you know you're dealing with a nemertian? Well, they are the skinny queen. They are very slim and long. They have four ganglia for a brain. Ganglia is a plural of ganglion. A ganglion is a bunch of nerve cells. A nemertian also has a proboscis. Nemertians are actually divided into two types according to the nature of their proboscis, anopla and enopla. Now, anopla means unarmed and enopla means armed, because the unarmed ones, the anopla, don't have a little stabby thing on the end of their proboscis. The enopla, the armed ones, do have a little stabby thing on the end of their proboscis, and you should not mess with them as a result. Now, nemertians, they respire through their skin. They don't have a heart, as I well know, due to past experience. And another way to tell that you're dealing with a nemertian, well, on their person, you will observe numerous temporary gonads. I will very much leave it to you to look at what a gonad is. G-O-N-A-D. I am not saying it out loud. Earth-dwelling nemertians, they move by gliding along on a trail of slime, using little cilial hairs on their underside. Sea nemertians move via a very complicated process called a dorsal ventral undulatory motion. This is commonly known as wiggling. Disclaimer, I'm demonstrating the movement now. If any of you want to join in at home, you're very free to. Right, big boy nemertians. Big boy nemertians include one called, its Latin name is Linus Longissimus. It kind of looks like a long line. It's also known as the bootlace worm. The greatest estimate of the length of the bootlace worm is about 55 metres. Although this is a bit rough because they can stretch, contract and split into many bits. Another special feature of the bootlace worm is that it secretes a toxic mucus strong enough to kill a crab, making it the most poisonous animal in Sweden. It lives in the sea there, by the way. It also lives in the waters off Norway and the UK. Basically, it's an nemertian that makes you numb and hurting. Okay. You want to hear about the flat ones, don't you? I can tell you about the flat ones, but be advised, they're a little bit wild. Here we go. Platyhelminth is the name for an animal commonly known as a flatworm. Now, the way that you know you're dealing with a flatworm is that it is flat. It has no circulatory system. It has no respiratory system. It doesn't have a skeleton. It doesn't even have a segmented body, making them a little more than a flat tube that food goes in and food comes out of. This lack of any meaningful organage or skeletal features is what allows the worm to be so very, very flat. If you're wondering how they manage to exist at all, they, like the nemertians, also breathe through their skin. there's a concentration gradient between the inside of the worm and the outside air or the sea. So it'll be a higher concentration of oxygen outside of the worm, which will diffuse to inside the worm where there is a lower concentration of oxygen. As I mentioned earlier, platyhelminths or flatworms are a bit of a wild group of lads. About 80% of them are parasitic. Bit rank, really. Living off humans and animals. One particularly problematic flatworm that you don't want to be dealing with is the New Zealand flatworm, which is an invasive species in the UK. Now, they're a problem because they eat earthworms. As we mentioned before, earthworms do a lot of good work churning up the soil and such like, so you don't want them to be eating them all. I mean, if you were going to associate with a New Zealand flatworm, you wouldn't want to associate with earthworms as well. You wouldn't want to invite them both to a dinner party or something, unless you want some different things to be on the menu. Now, if you were planning a dinner party, a better way of suddenly increasing the number of guests at said party and impressing them with a cool party trick is demonstrated by a type of flatworm called the planarian. Now, what you need to do is go and get out your favourite knife from the kitchen and approach the planarian and chop it. Now, it's a 5 centimetre long worm, so you're going to want to be precise with this if you want to chop it into more than about 3 bits. Now, each of these 3 bits has the capability to become a separate worm. In about 3 weeks, it will regrow, and it will be a perfectly fine individual little worm as if nothing happened. Now, the reason why the planarian has such a powerful regenerative ability is because about 1/5 of the worm is stem cells. Now, stem cells have the ability to turn into any different kind of cell that you may require, which is why it can regenerate so well. This means that the planarian is one of the only animals that is able to regrow a head. Pays to get ahead in this job market, doesn't it? Disclaimer. The Worm Tourism Board accepts no responsibility for the increased number of worm guests being offset by the decreased number of human guests, who all of a sudden need to excuse themselves from the party. Those humans are weak, and should be thankful worms haven't got their heads or tails around shotguns yet. Now, if you all allow me to tell you, there are some unsavoury things that you might see a marine flatworm doing that advance warning are not entirely safe for work. Now, they make up for having no heart or lungs or bones by being hermaphroditic, meaning they have both sets of gonads. I told you to Google it earlier, there's no excuses now. Now, having both sets of gonads means that any flatworm can become pregnant, really. And to determine who ends up carrying little flatworm eggs, there has to be a showdown. Now, you're thinking, flatworms, they don't have arms, they don't have legs, they don't have weapons of any kind. What on earth do they fight their assailant with? Well, Right, listen, it's got like, it's sort of split into 2 bits. It's got 2 ends like a tuning fork. And both of the ends are pointy as well. Now, the reason why is, of course, because the victorious flatworm has to stab the other one and gets them pregnant by injecting the other one with a very special substance just straight through the skin. Now, some flatworms, it's just one worm that stabs the other and does this, or, you know, you can go both ways. You can have two worms stabbing each other with that. And, you know, that's a natural way of doing it. So you might wonder, how does the flatworm species survive if there's no one to scrap about with? Do they just die out? Well, no. Some types of flatworm are enterprising enough to just give themselves a baby. Don't ask me how. I did many things during the little time off I had from this show, and finding out how a flatworm gives itself a baby is not one of them. Please send your answers once again on a postcard. Now, are you satisfied? Would you consider letting a worm into your life? Thought so. To embrace worm, simply ring the following number to get 17 trial worms sent to your house. 1-800-55. That's 1-800-55. Now, if you are a good worm carer, you may be able to train them for a life on the stage, and who knows, maybe there's even some sights in the theatre. Find out next time on Slap My Chicken, probably after exam because I'm really tired. And I need a worm. Disclaimer, worms on a string are an exotic invasive species and should not be released into the wild, because I know that some of you have been doing that. Last week I saw one going through my bins for scraps, poor thing.